The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
A principle is a principle, and in no case can it be watered down because of our inadequacy to live it in practice. We have to strive to achieve it. And the striving should be conscious, deliberate, and hard. We are Unitarian Universalists, and we come together each Sunday reaffirming that each and every person has worthiness and has dignity. We come together each week in the witness, the stubborn witness that what we do with our lives matters and that a loving world is indeed possible. We join in times of sorrow and pain, or joy and laughter, because we are seeking a community of accountability, a community of challenge, a community of support. We come because we don't know what we are doing or where we are going. We come because we are excited about where we are in life. So out of the multitude of our lives, we join together this morning as people bound at least in the belief that this 1 hour we will spend together in searching, in thinking, in singing and praying. Welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I'm Reverend Andrew L. Weber, and I'm a minister among ministers, a seeker among seekers. Your presence here, in person, online, your presence here is what makes this place holy and this time holy. We will join to talk about our principles, our beliefs, and how we can best live them out in the world. So come, let us worship together. Our time is hallowed by our presence. It is not the words I say, it is not the rituals we enact, but our presence, our intentions, which make this a holy place and a holy time. Even so, we do use words and ritual to mark our holy time, to mark this special spot. And in Unitarian Universalist faith, we hold dear the ritual. Everyone's pausing. What rituals do we have rituals? Yes, the ritual of lighting a chalice, right? That is a ritual of lighting a flaming chalice. This symbol is a lighthouse, a beacon to those searching. It's a porch light left on for those coming home. It's a hearth of warmth to dispel the dark, cold, and despair. It's a candle of celebration for any joyous day. Our flame is all these things and more. And I've asked Lindy to come forward, please, to light our chalice today. A symbol standing in for where words sometimes fall short. So come, let us kindle the symbol of our time together. And at this congregation, we have another symbol, another specific ritual we do every Sunday, calling for peace in the world, calling for peace in our hearts. So we will light our peace lamp and read these responsive words. May peace be with us.
And with all the people of the world.
Amen. We start by singing what I find to be a somewhat silly song, but I still like it. If you want a hymnal, they're in the back. The words will also be up on the screen. You may rise, please, in body or in spirit and turn to number 94, What is This Life?
Is this life, if full of care, we have no time to stand and stare, no time to stand beneath the boughs and stare as long as sheep or cows. No time to see when woods we pass, where squirrels hide their nuts in grass. No time to see broad daylight, streams full of stars like stars at night. No time to turn at beauty's glance and watch her feet, how they can dance. A poor life this, if full of care, we have no time to stand and stare.
Special story with a special guest. So if you want to come up and be with, we'll meet the special guest, please do.
Hi, I'm Manny McNeil, your resident library professional. We're going to have the kids stand. Hi, kids. We're going to have the kids sit on the podium. Yes, thank you. And then I'm going to drag this. Here, Kelpie's going to be with you. There we go. There we go. And then I'm going to kick this over. All right, do I just squeeze? Okay. All right, the book we're going to be reading today is Not Quite Narwhal by Jesse Simon. Can you still hear me? All right. Okay. Not Quite Narwhal. Kelp was born in the ocean. Look at that cute little baby. He knew early on that he was different from the other narwhals. His tusk wasn't as long as everyone else's. He had different tastes in food, and he wasn't a very good swimmer. But his friends didn't seem to mind, so Kelp decided he wouldn't either. That is, until he was swept away by a strong current. I wish I was a better swimmer. There he goes. Kelp found himself at the surface, closer to land than he'd ever been before. High up on a cliff, he spotted a mysterious, sparkling creature. It looked so familiar. It looked like kelp. Kelp swam toward land as fast as he could, which wasn't very fast at all, hoping that he could catch up with the creature that looked just like him. When he finally reached the shore, Kelp felt a little bit anxious. He had never left the ocean. He was nervous about walking for the first time, but the land creatures made it look so easy. Scribble, scrabble, scribble, scrabble, oof. He tried to walk like a crab. It wasn't. And now, see, he's gonna try and walk like a frog or hop like a frog. Ow. Eventually, he got the hang of it with his friend Turtle right there. Everything on land was strange and beautiful, but also kind of scary. Kelp began to think he might never find the creature that looked just like him, but as he stumbled out of the forest, land narwhals actually were unicorns, and by the looks of it, so are you. Kelp had never heard of unicorns before. They taught him all sorts of new things about his tusk. We call them horns. They introduced him to unicorn delicacies, unicones. They showed him how to gallop. There was no doubt that Kelp was, in fact, a unicorn. He was having so much fun that he didn't want to leave. But then he remembered all of his friends under the sea. Kelp missed them terribly, so he said goodbye to the unicorns and returned to the ocean. They said, come back soon. Kelp swam towards home as fast as he could, which wasn't really fast at all. hoping that the narwhals would still like him now that he was a unicorn. When he finally arrived, Kelp had butterflies in his stomach. Welcome home. They're so Kelp. They're happy to see him. Kelp took a deep breath and told his friends the news. It turns out I'm not a narwhal. Of course you're not. I'm a unicorn. And the narwhal said, we all knew that. They took it quite well. Kelp was happy to be home, but now that he'd experienced life on land with the unicorns, he couldn't seem to forget them. Did he want to be a land narwhal with the unicorns or a sea unicorn with the narwhals? Kelp couldn't decide, but then he realized that maybe, just maybe, he didn't have to choose. Narwhals and unicorns living in harmony with the turtles and the crabs. And then the back page is cute because there's a rhinoceros saying, I'm a unicorn, and Kelp is like, he'll have to figure it out on his own. All right, so now you all can watch me. I guess we'll sing off the kids, right? Yeah. All right, so I'm gonna fix the microphone while they pee. Peace.
Hello. I have a little video clip to share with you now. So this is from the show The Orville. So it's an episodical show that's similar to Star Trek. And in this episode, we're going to see a fantasy land where people can be instantly recognized for the great things that they do.
How long have the researchers been unaccounted for?
Over a month. You go in, you locate the anthropologists, you bring them back.
Hey, where are your badges? I can sell you a set of four, all preloaded with 200,000 upvotes.
Ma'am, have you seen either of these two men?
Everybody knows these guys. They got corrected.
John, your badge.
Oh my God, what did you do?
You performed a disrespectful act on a statue commemorating frontier hero Mella Giffenden.
Hold it right there!
You will now begin an apology tour, during which the people will vote on whether or not they believe your sincerity.
What happens if they don't believe me?
You will receive a series of neurological treatments to pacify any and all potentially negative impulses.
The two men you saw in the pictures that we showed you, they came here to study your planet. We need to find them. What did they do to you?
I did something terrible, and then I was corrected.
Do you believe John's apology?
Well, if he stays below 10 million downvotes before the tour window elapses, he's fine.
We need some kind of an inside advantage.
Now, there must be some way to influence the mass perception.
Everybody reads the master feed.
Grayson to Orville. We're running out of time.
I have gained access to the master feed, flooding the feed with 20 million entries.
So, April is National Volunteer Month. Next slide, please. One more. So, April is National Volunteer Month. It's a time to recognize volunteers and encourage more people to get involved in their communities. The members of our congregation are involved with many different volunteer organizations, most of which I'm ignorant of. For all of you whose beliefs call you to actions, I'd like to give a big round of applause. Today, I'd like to talk about beliefs, belief systems, and how they influence the choices that we make and the actions that we take. I'd like to start off with two definitions to provide some common language. The first, virtue signaling. So the Merriam-Webster dictionary defines virtue signaling as the act of, or practice of conspicuously displaying one's awareness of and attentiveness to political issues, matters of social and racial justice, etc., especially instead of taking effective action. I have one more definition that I'd like to give. I actually couldn't find a good definition for this, so I came up with one myself. It's for ethical compromise. So I define ethical compromise as acting or stopping yourself from acting from in some way because of some internal reason, for example, wanting to fit into a group. So the way that I see it, both of these, ethical compromise and virtue signalings, have to do with your actions not aligning with beliefs. With virtue signaling, the source is external, and with ethical compromise, the source is internal. In general, we want to do things that align with what we believe in, but we live in a complicated world, and it's not always easy to know what you believe in. An example is political beliefs. We just had our primary in PA on Tuesday. Many of us align with a political party, and when we're talking to others with different political alignment, adopt or defend the belief systems of our party. I'll admit, sometimes I even do this when I haven't put in the effort of forming an opinion of my own about the issue. There are too many things to care about, and I don't have time to think about all of them. Instead, I put my trust in other people, like me, in hopes that they would have beliefs that I agree with, and adapt some of those beliefs and that belief system as my own. Next slide, please. So I'd like to talk, So I'd like to talk about a conversation that I recently had about belief systems with a friend of mine. This friend is religious, and he was telling me that he likes to do a check-in every once in a while to check if his beliefs align with his belief system. Notice I said there, beliefs align with belief system, not the other way around. He went on to explain that his beliefs, what's right, what's wrong, how he should live his life to be a good person, are based off of his religion. And it wasn't his role to change what the religion was to reflect what his current thoughts were. I was really surprised by this. Yeah, our fourth tenet is search freely and responsibly for truth and meaning. And a major way that I interpret this is that there is no divinely ordained gospel that I have to follow. It's up to me to responsibly search for what is right and wrong. But the more that I thought about it, the more I realized I actually do this all the time. As many of you know, one of my core beliefs, one of the labels that I wear proudly, is that I am vegan. On almost a daily basis, I either ask or answer the question, is that vegan? Some examples include at the clothes store, trying to see if any of the steel toe boots that I need for work are. No, they're not. At the food store, checking to see if this brand of salt and vinegar chips has milk powder in it. I'm looking at you, hers. I tell myself what I believe in is what? Reducing animal cruelty? But in reality, the question I'm asking myself isn't, does this action minimize animal cruelty? The question that I'm asking is this vegan? In reality, I'm doing the same thing that my friend is doing, making sure that my beliefs align with my vegan belief system, and I put my trust that other people like me would have beliefs that I agree with. Next slide, please. So I thought about my actual beliefs on veganism. With the intent of updating my belief system, I thought about starting 10 years ago, going vegetarian. I had a cool vegetarian friend that I wanted to be more like and who I looked up to. I thought about 8 years ago when my wife Alex joined me in becoming vegetarian. This was probably my most annoying and performative time. Constantly letting people know around me that I was vegetarian and having conversations try to convert people on a daily basis. Now, that's virtue signaling. Here's a PSA to anyone with a new vegetarian in their life. All new vegetarians, and especially vegans, go through it. It's just a phase, and it will get better. I thought about 5 years ago when, after months of talking about how it was inconsistent to hold the beliefs that led us to vegetarianism and not take on the next step to veganism, we finally threw out the last item in our home, the shaker cheese, on New Year's Day. And then last I thought about 2 years ago when I found out some of the things that happen in the animal research buildings at my work from someone who does it firsthand. That the drugs that I helped make went through the same animal testing, including animal testing on chimpanzees. That day, I didn't bring up being vegan. I'd like to go back to the conversation that I had with my friend. An important counterpoint he brought up is that your current beliefs may be informed by multiple belief systems. And disagreeing with one part of a framework doesn't necessarily mean you have to reject the whole framework. I know through my big pharma engineer lens that animal testing is a necessary part of the drug discovery process and that it will save human lives. I also know through my vegan lens that it comes at the cost of exploiting and violating animal lives. So I'm at a crossroads. Is working in this industry compromising my ethics? I wanted to share this with all of you because I thought this exercise was really helpful. It was useful to look at what I believe and how the intersection of my different belief systems informed these beliefs. It was also useful to review situations where my actions didn't match my beliefs and reflect on when I was trying to virtue signal or I was compromising my ethics to fit in better with people. So, next slide, this slide actually. I have an exercise for all of you. I'm calling it an ethics scan. So, I'd like you to think of a belief that you hold, perhaps relating to something that you volunteered with this month, or something that you would have liked to volunteer with, but didn't have the opportunity to. So, what do I believe? And what belief systems of mine inform this belief? What are the choices that I can make? And what do my belief systems say about these choices? What are the extrinsic factors that impact these choices? Am I leaning toward any of them because I want to signal my virtue to others? And finally, what are the intrinsic factors that are impacting these choices? Am I leaning toward any of them because of social discomfort, even though the choice would be compromising a self-identified ethic? There is no right answer, but I hope that this can help you to be more mindful about the beliefs that you hold and the actions that you choose.
Keeping in line with talking about our ethics, our beliefs, we're going to rise in body or in spirit for hymn number 298. We're going to sing 299 later, so I was on the right page. 298, Wake Now My Senses.
Wake now my senses and hear the earth call. Feel the deep power of being in awe. Keep with the web of creation your vow. Giving, receiving as love shows us how. Wake now, compassion, give heed to the cry. Voices of suffering fill the wide sky. Take as your neighbor both stranger and friend, praying and striving their hardship to end. Thank you.
I always like to keep people on their toes. So if you had the hymnal, there are five verses. We only did two of them. Five is a lot. Five is a lot. If you need to, we can sing together later if you want to engage with that. Our reading today, I can almost just do the title of the reading and you get the point, right? I mean, this is a good one. I really like this. It's from Liberals Can Win Again If They Stop Being So Annoying. And the title goes on a little bit, but that's the point. This was written in 2017, in the summer of 2017, and it was talking about Trump has become president. Liberals in general, liberals are upset. How can they win again? This man was saying, they stop being so annoying. In his words, from Business Insider. It's an opinion piece from Business Insider. Everything I ever say, you take with salt. So just know which grain of salt you need to take it with. It's that, talking about liberals, it's that they're too ready to bother too many ordinary people about too many of their personal choices, all the way down to the hamburgers they eat. They don't always want to prohibit these choices, but they have become smug and condescending toward anyone who does not match the personal lifestyle choices of liberal elites. Why would the voters on the receiving end of that smug condescension trust such a movement to operate the government in their best interest? Suppose you're a middle-income man with a full-time job, a wife who also works outside the home, and some children. Suppose it's a Sunday in the early fall, and your plan for today is to relax, have a burger, and watch a football game. Conservatives will say, go ahead, that sounds like a nice Sunday. In the Trump era, they're not going to bother you about not going to church. He's got some pointed remarks here. But you may find that liberals have a few points of concern they want to raise about what you mistakenly thought was your fundamentally non-political plan for the day. Liberals want you to know that you should eat less meat so as to contribute less to global warming. They're concerned that your diet is too high in sodium and saturated fat. They're upset that the beef in your hamburger was factory farmed. They think the name of your favorite football team is racist. Or even if you hate the Washington Redskins, they have a long list of other reasons that football is problematic. The hamburger problem is about more than just hamburgers and football. Beyond what you're doing this weekend, it's easier to install car seats beyond what you're doing this weekend, the movement has a long list of moral judgments about your ongoing personal behavior. The SUV you bought because it was easier to install car seats doesn't get good enough gas mileage. Why don't you have an electric car? The gender reveal party you held for your most recent child inaccurately conflated gender with biological sex. Gosh, cutting into a pink or blue cake seems innocent enough, but honestly, it's not, Marie Claire warned earlier the month this was written. You don't ride the subway because you have that gas-guzzling car, but if you did, the way you would sit would be sexist. No item in your life is too big or too small for this variety of liberal busybodying. On the one hand, the viral video you found amusing was actually a manifestation of the patriarchy. On the other hand, you actually have an irresponsibly large number of carbon-emitting children. Now, all this scolding, this messaging that you should feel guilty about aspects of your life that you didn't think were anyone else's business, leads to a weird outcome when you go to vote in November. Democrats believe they have an economic agenda that would help you, for example, by relieving your substantial childcare costs. You're not particularly religious, and you're not thrilled about Republican complaints about gay marriage or marijuana. You don't make enough money to benefit much from Republican tax cut proposals. But are you going to entrust the power of government to the side of the debate that's been so annoyingly judgmental about your life choices? Do you trust those people to have your best interests at heart? Liberals have supplanted conservatives as moralizing busybodies. The problem with the liberal busybodying is not that it passes any judgment on individual behavior, but that the judgments have become too numerous, too specific, too frequently changing. Following all the rules has become exhausting. There ends our reading. Now, there is a very fine line in Unitarian Universalism, the line which keeps many of us committed to this faith and yet so wary about speaking about or mentioning our religion. Right? Live your values. Look at what you believe. Look at what you believe deep down in your heart. Discern what is true in your inmost being and live that truth. But also be aware that everyone else in the world has that same right, that same responsibility to live their own belief, right? So don't live your life in such a way that might be off-putting to someone else. Don't offend someone else. Definitely don't talk about religion. But heck, is this even a religion? Well, that another day we can talk about that. So best we just don't bring it up, right? We just don't talk about that. Because we don't want to offend, we don't want to get into a personal conflict. And yet we come together each week to be comforted, to be challenged. We come together and we are told, we tell ourselves to be more loving, to respect other people, to support the environment, to donate or volunteer with nonprofits. We live in a dichotomy of not wanting to offend, not wanting to be in conflict, but also wanting to do the right thing, to live our best lives. Great. And then the reading I share is from an article condemning many of our politics. I'm speaking in generalizations here, right? These are generalizations. Many of us would love a Sunday afternoon of hamburgers and football, or frankly, some of us might love a Sunday where we don't have to worry about every single word we say and how it might offend someone else. I sometimes feel like I'm living in two competing cultures. And I always speak for myself, so this is me. I feel like I'm living in two competing cultures sometimes. I leave these walls, and people may seem too crass. While inside our national faith community, people seem too sensitive, right? On the one instance, I drive home in my EV, going the speed limit, right? Yeah? Well, yes. And someone roars past me in a no-passing zone, spewing exhaust. Oh my gosh. On the other side, I go to a national gathering of Unitarian Universalists, and I can't voice my opinion because I'm white and male, and I might offend someone. These are both actual occurrences. These are my life experiences. So which is it? Should I drive faster and be less judgmental? With a less judgmental vehicle, my vehicle judges others, yeah. Should I drive faster and not really follow my ethics? Or should I recuse myself from all public discussions because of my identity? Maybe I switch how I act and what I do in one place versus another. When Kevin and I came together to talk about what we were doing this morning, we discussed what we're doing. We're both vegan. Surprise. And we both hold that as a pretty important part of our identities. And for me, at least, I can't speak for Kevin. You talk to him if you want his opinion. Veganism is part of my personal theology. It's part of my religion. It's how I decide to live my faith in the world. And we heard some of his too, living his faith in the world. So when we started talking, we could have easily have gone to the side of meat is myrtle, militant veganism, right? You know, get out the picket signs and spray painting the fur with red. Yeah, we could have done shaming. We could have done that way. We could have gone that way. And we even talked about having this service on a potluck Sunday and what that would have done for our shared meal. It's like, oh, I see you're having the hamburger, huh? And although it was logistics, I think it worked out well that we didn't have it on a potluck Sunday. Potluck is next week, so come again. There is meat. There are vegan options. It's changed. 2 weeks is Mother's Day. Go celebrate yourself or your mother or another maternal figure. Next week, come here, have a potluck. But you know what? I don't care if you're vegan. I don't care. Truly, I don't. What I care about, though, is whether you've taken the time to look at your beliefs, your faith, to look at your life and see how your faith and your life intersect and interplay. You're vegan? That's wonderful. Tell me about that. You eat meat? That's great. Okay, tell me about, like, why? What have you done to discern, to think about my beliefs in how I eat and what I eat? There's a quote I've shared before. I'll probably share it again. You'll hear this from me a couple times, from William Gardner. We all have two religions, the religion we talk about and the religion we live. And our task is to make the difference between those two as small as possible. Now, the last time I said that, there was some pushback the last time I said this from people saying that there was no difference, that I can't say everyone has two religions. And that's a good point. There are some people for whom this is not true, that their actions and their beliefs are always in line. And for that, I condone you. I say, that's fantastic. Well done. For me, I know there's work to be done. I say one thing, I do another. They're not always in line. They're not always in line. And the pushback also got me thinking about this. What if the religion that I live is the more truer of the two religions, more true than the one I talk about? When I say that I believe, this is what I believe, that we are all created with a spark of the divine, with God in us. That's what I say, that's what I feel here. But if I don't act that way, if I'm hateful towards someone, which is my true religion? Do I actually not believe that we're all divine beings created in the image of God? Do I actually think that someone's more worthy than someone else? That's for me to work on and talk and think about and pray on. Which is the truer of my religions? Do I need to adjust one or the other? I don't know. Do my actions define my values? Or do my values define my actions? Vice versa. And I have a story for you about this one, a story about running, which is something else I hold very dear to myself. I was chatting with someone about spitting while running. If you run or jog, you're like, oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. If you don't, you're like, what are you talking about? Sometimes when you're running, you have saliva or a bug or dust or something, and then there's a question like, is it okay to spit while you're running? Or are you working out? I see a head shaking. Someone's saying, and there are different opinions. And while I was talking, I said, well, is it okay? Because if you're just walking down the street or you're going out to get groceries and you just lean over and start spitting, people are like, oh, that's not really culturally acceptable. It's a little gross, a little dirty, rude maybe. But if you're jogging, does that change? My fellow runner responded, oh, well, sure, it's okay because I do it. Which is not bad. It's different. My response was the same, but also opposite. And I said, well, I don't see a moral problem with it, and so I do it. It was the other way. And the conclusion was the same, but the path to get there was different. One externally motivated, one internally. I do it, so it's okay. And the example is just one example. If you think spitting while running is not okay, that's all right. You're still a wonderful person. But so getting there, how you get there is like, it's something I do, therefore it's ethically okay, or I've thought about this and I think it's ethically, morally appropriate, and therefore I do it. This is our hard task. This is our hard task. Do I need to change my actions? Do I need to rethink my view of the world? Or both, right? That's the charge today. The difficulty with not wanting to be a busybody, a liberal busybody or a conservative busybody or any sort of busybody, the charge with not wanting to do that, but also holding to our values and our morals and our lifestyle and our religion. And I think the answer is not to, is to not give a bleep about what other people think. You can quote me on that, really. You don't give a bleep about what other people think. You do what's right for you. I don't eat meat. Great. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm not going to judge you based on your eating habits. But as we do this, as we aren't caring about what other people think, we also have to care very deeply about what other people think. And we have to care very deeply about how we impact other people. There's that two-sided thing. Yes, right? You may think I'm virtue signaling. You may think I'm just doing this just to look good. I have to let go of that. But I also have to hold on to how my actions impact you. What am I doing that will affect my relationship with others, the world around me? So give as many bleeps as you possibly can about other people too. Right? When I spit when I'm running, do I look for someone next to me? I sure hope I do, right? When I eat my soy-based burger, rainforest deforestation there to plant the soy, with Mexican avocados in the wintertime, am I thinking of the environmental impact of that, and that maybe if I went to a local beef farmer, I'd have a lot less by having a meat burger? I hope I've thought about that. So it's not giving, it's not giving a bleep about what someone thinks, but it's also caring very deeply about our impact, about what our actions do. So it comes full circle here. Kelp, the narwhal, kelp is gone. The picture is here. Kelp, I think, has gone down the hallway. But the narwhal, right, found two places where he could be true to himself. He didn't have to change who he was in each of those places. And that's what I hope we can do, where I hope we can live into the world. We all make decisions about how we live in our lives, what we do publicly or privately, and hopefully we can be ourselves in this place. Hopefully this can be one of those places where we can be ourselves. We can say, I'm thinking that this is how I live. I have this question about my belief. This is a place where we can say, do you spit when you run? What do you think about that? I'm going to change my actions or my beliefs. I mean, my example is that's why I use that example, because it's like, that's a sort of silly, we can get there. What about your eating habits? Well, it's getting a little personal. It's getting a little personal here. This is a place where we can try that out, where we can say, this is my faith, and I'm going to live it out, and I want to see how it impacts other people, but I also want to say, I'm my own person, right? This is where we do our discernment, our testing, to see what it would mean if we live without holding on to others' judgment, but to see our impact on other people. So live your life. Live your faith. Amen and amen. And now we're going to sing 299. Same page in the hymnal. You may rise in body or spirit. Make channels for the streams of love. Here's another one of our rituals we have. Each Sunday, we set apart a time for this ritual, which speaks to a larger truth, just as rituals do. The truth that you are important, that your life is important, that your joys, your sorrows, what's going on in your world is important. Yes, you who know no one else here. Yes, you who have been coming for decades, this community cares about you. And this is where we come together to show that care, that if you have a joy, a sorrow overflowing, something held in your heart which you must share, this is where we open up the floor for you to come forward and to speak in the microphone and share that so your joy may be heightened and your sorrow lessened. If you have something overflowing for this community, please come forward.
We'll bring this time of sharing to a close. We're going to sing Spirit of Life. This will be led by Christine Perry and accompanied by Isaac Strader.
Sharing a prayer with you from a dear past colleague of mine, Reverend Nancy Schaefer. Please pray with me. This making of a whole self takes such a very long time. Pieces are not sequential, nor our supplies. We work here, then there, hold up tattered fabric to the light, sew past dark intent, use all our thread. Sleeves may come before length, buttons before a rounded neck. We sew at what most needs us, and as it asks, sew again. The self is not one thing once made, unaltered, not midnight task alone, not after other work. It's everything we come upon, make ours, all this fitting of once was, and has become. Amen. Our closing hymn is a well-known one. I'm on my way. It's number 116 in the hymnal. You may rise in body or in spirit. I'm on my way. Even as our time this morning comes to a close, the charge remains the same. Live the faith of your heart. Take these flames and hold them dear in your life, so that love and life is spread more abundantly to those who you meet throughout the week, throughout your life. We extinguish our symbols, but not the hope and the challenge we hold inside ourselves. I end with a charge from Anne Frank. I can feel the suffering of millions, and yet if I look up into the heavens, I think that it will all come right, that this cruelty too will end, and that peace and tranquility will return again. In the meantime, I must uphold my ideals, for perhaps the time will come when I shall be able to carry them out. Amen, and blessed be.